When Patricia Williams was a young girl, she would watch Leave It to Beaver and wonder, why isn't my family like this?
Beaver, there's something bothering you.
What kind of, Mom? We're having an intelligence test tomorrow in school, and I don't know if I'm going to pass.
Beaver, of course you will. Your father did very well in school, and I got good grades.
Yeah, it's nice having all that smart stuff in the family, Mom. I just hope it didn't all get worn out before it came to me.
Patricia didn't have her version of June and Ward Cleaver. She and her sister weren't perfect kids like Beaver and Wally.
It wasn't like I saw on the Leave It to Beaver show. I was hoping for her to come rescue me every day. I was like, they don't do this to the Beaver.
Patricia's life was about as far as you could get from the Beavs. She grew up in poverty in Atlanta during the crack epidemic, and at 7 years old was stealing money from her mother's drunk friends. By the time she was 15, she had two children, and she started dealing drugs to get by, getting shot and later going to prison. But Patricia found a way out for herself and for her family, trading hustling for humor.
I sent my daughter to college for 4 years to be a teacher. Let me say this, y'all. My daughter's the first one to ever go to college in my family, and she's the first one to graduate high school in 3 generations. Don't clap for her, clap for me. I paid for that mess.
Today, Patricia Williams is better known as Ms. Pat. She's a comedian and author of the book Rabbit, the autobiography of Ms. Pat. I talked with Patricia Williams about her remarkable journey, beginning with the abuse she faced as a young girl from older men in and around her family.
It was really strange, Ray, because I remember having those dance parties, and then you got grown men looking at you like, shake that behind. I don't know what I can say on this show, so I'm not going to say it. Yeah. And I used to just feel so uncomfortable. Again, it was because I watched a lot of Leave It to Beaver, believe it or not. And whatever she didn't do, I didn't think we were supposed to be, it wasn't supposed to go down in my house. So I was like, Miss Cleveland, the Beaver don't have to dance for his mama drunk friends. So when my sister would get out there and cut a rug, and I would get out there with my face all frowned up, my mama like, set your butt down. You don't never participate. I hated it. I just hated being looked at like that.
You apparently knew there was something wrong with it, even if you couldn't give it a name.
Yes.
And it comes through loud and clear in those early chapters.
Yes. Yes, it does. I just knew a lot of the stuff that was going on in the house wasn't supposed to go down. I mean, we was lighting cigarettes. We were pouring your mama shots. We was pouring up corn liquor. And I was like, I don't know if we're supposed to be doing this. It just never felt right as a kid.
Now, later on, after an older man has two kids with you, and your own mother doesn't step in to keep this man 100 miles away from you, you become a drug dealer. But in the world that you portray, it seems like the most logical thing in the world because you have to support yourself.
It wasn't about me, you know, at that point. I had two kids at 15, could not get a job. I tried to get a job, but they was like, you're supposed to be in school. You need a work permit. I mean, I had to take care of my kids. I mean, me and my sister, we both had a kid. She was 15 and I was 14. And we would literally go steal milk out of the store. So when I discovered selling drugs, I finally could give my kids everything I thought they needed. So I was like, well, this is what I'm going to do. I mean, I got an eighth grade education. I mean, I can't get no job. I mean, I'm underage and everybody. That my community was, drugs was everywhere. If you didn't use it, you sold it. So I decided to be on the side with the money.
Every now and then, an adult sort of comes and lands in your life who isn't like that. And
yes,
there's something kind of wonderful about that in the way that you tell it.
The first one, other than my grandfather, he was the very first one, even though I was raised in his crazy house, was a teacher by the name of Miss Troop. Once my granddaddy went off to jail for shooting someone, we moved, and it was a teacher that really stepped in and helped me out. I was the dirty kid. I was the unfortunate kid. I was the kid whenever they gave out of a Thanksgiving basket at school back in those days, me and my brothers and sisters always got it because they knew we was poor. So, I mean, she would buy me clothes and comb my hair and brush my teeth. And she gave me my first, I want to say she gave me my first hope. She was like, Patricia, you can be anything in the world you want to be. All you got to do is just dream. And this lady would bring me clean clothes to school because I got picked on a lot. She would comb my hair. She would brush my teeth. She would feed me, you know, and I really felt loved that year I was in her class.
Were you so unused to being helped in that way that you were almost a little suspicious of it? Like, why is this woman washing my clothes? Why is this woman who I don't even know taking such an interest in whether I learn how to read?
Yes, because I never felt like anybody cared. And then if you did feel like somebody cared, they wanted something. You felt like they wanted you to do something that you didn't want to do. So when she stepped in and, you know, she started to help and stuff, I was kind of taken aback. I was like, you want to help me? Nobody wants to help me for nothing. But she brought me in and I really opened up to her and, you know, I felt safe. She made sure I was not the dirty kid for that year I was in her class. She really looked out for me.
And finally, someone comes into your life who's willing to take you as you are and love you as you are, apparently, and love the kids who've come into your life as they are. In some ways, the second hero of the book after you.
Yeah, that's my husband. I've been with him since 93. He came in, and at the time I had two kids, I was at the lowest in my life. You know, I was tired of being in the streets. I had been shot already twice, and I started to grow up a little bit. I was like, well, if I get killed, who's going to take care of my kids? And I was like, I got to leave this life behind. So I literally started praying, because also I was in a very abusive relationship with my first kid's father. Here I am. When I met him, I was 20. When I had the first kid, I was 14. He was 21. So he had so much control over me. You know, he was the only really man figure in my life at that time. So when I'm escaping this relationship, I meet this wonderful guy who just got out of the military, and we just hit it off. I'm with him about 8 months, and I get custody of my sister's kids, and he wanted to leave, but he ended up staying. We had no kids. We raised six kids together. Six kids, and he didn't have any. Now, one time did he judge me, he showed me how to get my life back together. I never forget it. After I come out of that lifestyle and I'm a convicted felon and I was feeling sorry for myself. Oh, society don't want me to succeed. He was like, look, he handed me a CD and he said, listen to this. And I never forget it was Outkast. Get up and get out and get something. Don't let the days of your life go by. He said, stop crying and do something about it. He said, you better than this. And I was like,
and
well,
you did do
gonna-
something about it. You have a life now. Well, you're a published author, but you do stand up and you live a normal life.
I live a normal life. Looking at me, you would have never thought I'd been through this. I mean, I tell people all the time, I'm a convicted felon. I'm not proud of it, but I know where I come from. And my, you know, the whole thing was to keep my kids from becoming what society, especially my black son, what society think black men are. I was like, I have to save my kids. And I tell my kids all the time, I say, you can mess up your credit a thousand times, but if you mess up your criminal background history, they will judge you for the rest of your life. And I'm here to make sure you don't make the mistakes I made.
The book is Rabbit, the autobiography of Ms. Pat. The author is Patricia Williams. Great to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.